Welcome to part two of this episode of The Story Never Ends. Enjoy.
We're in the future right now.
Yes. I don't know if you have anything, because for me, that I led on to the lime interactions. Did you have anything about, and you talked about the conversation.
My next point is the lime interaction when they're at the table.
You go.
Did you want to get into the one at the beach? Because I'd already mentioned the one at the beach.
Oh,
because you said something about something that happens at the beach.
Oh, okay. So, well, first of all, Anne is the biggest flirt ever in this movie. I don't know why, but she's a big flirt with Mr. Elliot. Super turn off for me as Anne's character. But what I found funny...
Can I just say I actually kind of enjoyed those
To be honest with you, I know people have a soft spot for Anne regarding...
More like around the humor of... Because she was kind of flirting. He was flirting more, definitely. But she seemed more amused with him.
Amusement, but I just didn't like it for Anne. I know, I'm sorry, I'm being a purist, but that's just me. I feel like if that was Elizabeth Bennet, I could probably accept it, because that's what Elizabeth Bennet does. She smirks and she laughs and everything's funny to Elizabeth, and I can accept that, but not for Anne.
So my next moment, the lime, when they're in lime and they're at the table, I'll actually read what I said, so it comes out the way I want it to come out. So I like the moment they had at the table whilst in lime, after Anne says, so Wentworth, they're talking about, you know, Wentworth getting married and him saying that, you know, he wouldn't want to put any woman through, like, the pain, the grief of having a husband who's at war and is at sea and all that stuff. And then Anne says, it is not for Wentworth to decide on what his future wife can and cannot endure, and that she might be forging, that the wife might be forging her own adventure while she's at home, like she's not just, you know, crying over a husband or something. And they shared this sweet smile, and I was more focused on his smile because he looked more handsome for a second. And then the way he looks at her after she has a little talk with Benwick, I think that's when they're talking about poetry or something like that. Mm. And there's a hint of curiosity and jealousy in that look that I found delicious. And I was latching onto that because I did not have any of those moments throughout the whole, and probably I was reaching. It's a mighty reach, probably, but I took it and ran with it. And I'm like, I did not have enough scenes in the movie so far to make me root for this couple in a way. Yeah.
You know what's funny? Because I'm like informed by like so many adaptations now, I still remember 1995 for me rings true in terms of how I would ideally like the interaction that the party has when they go to Lyme, right? Because the idea here is the Musgroves, or at least Mary, is very uppity. She doesn't like, you know, thinking of poverty. Remember when she says, you can't go to a house where there's like less than five servants.
Yes.
Love that. But either way, the Elliot pride and all that stuff usually comes across as like looking down on a lot of people. So when they go to Lyme, the Musgroves aren't a factor in this. They don't look down on anyone per se. But I remember in the BBC radio adaptation that I listened to, because I've listened to it so much, I think the line kind of comes back to me. And she says, oh, I could have known these people, or I could have been friends with these people, talking about Captain Harville, Captain Benwick, and all that stuff. And the reason why I say that 1995 does this for me the way I like is because when they get there, and you probably just watched it now, so you might not remember it that much, but they get there, they get to Lyme, and they get into this house that Captain Harville is living in. And obviously it's small and it's cramped, and to Mary, you know, Musgrove, it's like, oh my God, poverty. And more maybe the other guys just like, oh, okay, this is a bit less than what we expected. But Anne just looks so happy because the way the Harvilles and Captain, well, less so Captain Benny, because he's not like a jovial person, but the way the Harvilles welcome them is so happy and joyful. And she's kind of like, this is what good society is like. Because if you remember when there's a conversation that Mr. Elliot has, and he's trying to like get into Anne's good graces, and she says, oh, you know, the best conversation is with people that are blah blah blah, like-minded or whatever. And he's like, no, that that's not good. That's not good conversation. It's the best conversation or something. So as in that allusion to the idea that people that you fit with and your values align, you can just find them to be good company, regardless of their status, right? Regardless of whether they have money and all this stuff. So for me, I don't really remember the 2022 version, obviously, because most of it just went over my head. But I always love, whenever I reflect back, I don't know if 2007 did this, by the way, you can let me know because I don't really remember it that well. But I always love this idea that Anne sort of then looks at how far he has come. And she just looks at herself as having missed out on being part of these interactions that he's now a part of, like this company sort of, that he's now a part of, because she obviously was persuaded and all that stuff. So she's sort of like looking at herself as like someone who's lost out on something. You get that sense of loss from how she's sort of reacting to this good company. Because obviously her family sucks, man. They're totally not even people that already said all this stuff. I always keep saying, I don't understand how in this 2022 version, I never feel like Anne lost anything from Frederick. I don't feel that sense of loss and longing enough. Like you said, when they're at the beach, when I'm going to get into that, it's more so that she's making fun of the moment rather than being in the moment, right? Like you're saying, she's smirking and all that stuff. So for me, regardless of however she interacts with Captain Benek and how Wentworth looks at her, there's no poignancy in that scene for me, the lime scene, like it is in 2007 and 1995. Because in 2007, you really get this sense that Captain, like Wentworth is now looking at her like, oh, okay, she seems to be fitting into my world. Because this is someone who had a stigma, or at least was looking back on the fact that he was rejected for the company he kept and the fact that he had no status. But he's looking at the woman he still loves. He hasn't admitted that he loves. I love that in 2007 he's like, I'm talking about Anne, who else, or whatever, when he admits that he's still in love with her, when they're like on the beach in Lyme, not beach, well, when they, remember, like the water is like, I don't know why they shot it that way, but the water is like pouring across the wall and everything. I'm like, you have to go back to that safe place? You could have just done it in a room. But anyway, either way, I can, in those other adaptations, I can see them looking at each other in different ways. But maybe because I need to give it another chance, I don't think I ever will, 2022, unfortunately. But I just don't feel that. I feel like it then gets undercut even more moving on to the conversation at the beach. I do not know why this conversation happens. And the reason why I say this is because, yes, I understand what they're trying to go for in this whole thing of like friends and stuff. Like modern stories, right, are all about talk about everything you're doing, right? Talk about, have conversations, don't be like cagey and all that stuff. But it's funny to me because we still have love stories and romances where people are saying the wrong thing and trying to figure out the right thing. And, you know, it's not like we don't have rom-coms that literally hinge off the fact that someone said the wrong thing and the whole story is like whatever.
It spirals from it that. Spirals. Yes. Yeah. Misunderstandings.
Why,
yeah.
Literally, I don't understand why they have to take away the fact that persuasion is all about the slow burn until they can finally feel like they can open up, because there's so much around them. In this particular Lyme interaction, Louisa is a big factor to Anne not potentially thinking there's any hope with Wentworth. At least that's how I interpret it, based on other adaptations. Louisa is now sort of taken the front and she's being touted as the one that Wentworth might propose to. You know, the Crofts are saying it. The Musgroves are like looking forward to it. Everybody's looking forward to Louisa and Wentworth getting together. So Anne obviously doesn't think there's any chance or anything like that. Same as Wentworth. Wentworth's mentality at that time is not so much to be getting back in Anne's good girl, or at least talking to Anne in such a way that they become friends, so to speak, as they do. What I actually think is interesting is this story undercuts the fact that they could have had a conversation, but because persuasion is written in such a way where it keeps dragging out, there's always interruptions, there's always people getting in the way. 2007 does it in a good way. They get to the beach, they almost talk, and then he gets called by Captain Harville. Like, Wentworth or whatever. That's perfect. Like, as an audience, you're like, damn it, you could have just had that conversation. But it drags on the moment. In this scene, I don't even understand what was going on, to be honest with you. I literally, you said it, and I thought, that makes sense, what you said. But that's not how I read whatever happened. He starts off talking about whatever he's talking about. And then he's like, oh, you know, I could have done this. And it just did not make sense at all. Oh, why that scene happened the way it did. And he's like, we want to be friends. Why would you say that? Like, what is the point of being friends in this world where you need introductions?
So that they can say that now we're friends. Oh, now we're worse than, what did you say?
Strangers, we're friends.
Friends.
And I'm like, okay, let's I just said this. This let's be friends conversation, right? Leads to Anne. I mean, sorry, Wentworth, sorry, when Louisa falls. It leads to Wentworth offloading on Anne about how, you know, he misled Louisa and all this stuff. I don't mind that happening because it does happen in 1995 and it does happen in 2007 in some variation.
Yep, yep.
But the difference is, for example, in 1995, he has a smoother delivery because he's frustrated at himself for having let it go that far. And he's saying, and it actually doesn't happen in this way where, like, he says it before they've even, she's even fallen. He, like, so, no, it doesn't, so it doesn't happen in this way where there's this friendship thing now that's there. In Anne's mind,
you know, I think I understand what you mean because it undercuts the angst of the situation between them.
I'm not articulating maybe as best I want to, but that's what I'm exactly. It undercuts the fact that for Anne, she's still thinking he's so much in love with Louisa. He's been so affected by her falling. Wentworth is thinking, I misled this girl. The woman I love is right there, but there's still so many unsaid things and we're still to deal with all of that stuff.
True that.
It just takes away from everything that then follows after that. It takes away from the fact that there's this. Anyway, I'll let you go on any next point that you have before I even talk about the rest of these other things that I picked up on the interaction. But that sea beach interaction, and then she's swimming because he said they're friends, so it's maybe supposed to show renewal. It just takes away everything.
You know, that scene was pointless. You know what? I'm like, oh, this music is nice. I'm enjoying it. But that scene was pointless. What was that supposed to do? What was it?
Literally, because if what he's was it? Moved on from maybe the idea of Louisa, don't be moved on. If he's
unless
not
she was crying and or the water was supposed to represent her tears. Again, I'm reaching.
Literally, you have to always reach in this movie. And that's not fun for a romantic movie. You're supposed to just get the rope. Like, that's what I was also going to say, the misdirection of engagements. I don't know if you had any more about the beach scene on Lime as well.
No.
The misdirection of those engagements. And by that, I mean the engagements that are hinted at in terms of Wentworth and Louisa and Mr. Elliot saying, oh, come to the wedding or whatever, you know, like to Wentworth. So fine, okay, Mr. Elliot says whatever he says. It does happen in all the other adaptations. That's fine. I don't even care about that particular misdirection. But for me, what's annoying is how they make it seem as if Anne believes that Wentworth will marry Louisa until the very last moment. Until the moment she sees the letter, she still thinks that he's going to freaking marry.
Yeah.
It takes away everything. Like, 2007, right? They've left off at this moment, this juncture, whatever, where... what is it called? Their last interaction is when he goes to break the news that Louisa has fallen and he goes back to the Musgroves. Harking back on what I saw. And then they part on this sort of like weird understanding that they might never meet again, possibly. But Anne is thinking he's going back to Louisa to tend to her because he's like, I'm going to go back to Bath or whatever. And it's not he's not saying I'm going to Bath to love Louisa. He's just saying I'm going to attend to this situation, this mess that I've created. But in Anne's mind, exactly. Anne is he's going back to his love interest. And whatever. And so Wentworth is, you know, obviously caught up in 2007, especially they emphasize how he's like, I've misled Louisa. So he's caught up in his own thing. So he's just really distraught or whatever. 1995 kind of has a similar interaction where Anne leaves thinking Louisa's the next thing that he's going to attend to, whatever. But regardless, in both adaptations, right, by the time they get to the tea shops interaction, the whole engagement misdirection has been done away with because, first of all, in 2007, he comes back to tell Anne that they're going to vacate Kellynch Hall. And he's like, oh, because of the upcoming engagement. And she's we're not getting engaged. What are you talking about? And that's done away with. And then in, what is it called, in 1995, it's a similar scene, but she's told by the uncle, by Admiral Croft or whatever, that there is no engagement between the two. Like, he says, oh, you know, it's interesting that Captain Benek and Louisa had this connection. She's like, Captain Benek and Louisa? Is like, yeah, they're engaged. She's like, oh, shit. So that means Captain Wentworth is free. So for me then, when it then comes to the third act of the 2022 version, it literally hinges on the fact that Anne is still thinking Wentworth is getting married. It ruins everything about the tea shop for me.
Yes.
I'll keep going because I will go mad after this.
I think I forget. She finds out that when she's with Lady Russell that Wentworth is getting married to Louise.
And I don't know why Lady Russell would know that, but anyway.
It was weird. But and then she, when she's in that tea shop thing and she bumps into Wentworth, does she now know that he's not married? No, or
she knows he's still engaged. Literally, the moment happens, she finds out and he comes into the tea shop. 1995, there's more interactions. And mind you, they've cut a lot about the Mrs. Smith element as well. So there's not as many subplots to drag the story a little bit longer. So in 1995 and 2007, they have the benefit of like having her interact with other things. So by the time they get to the tea shop where she sees him again, for the first time, she sees Captain Wentworth. She's literally like, oh my God. Oh my God, like this man is back in my life. What is going on right now? She's freaking out again. Anyway, what I was trying to emphasize, I'll just touch on the tea shop thing because of why the initial misdirection of the engagement ruins the ongoing thing. For some reason, they have Anne act like she's wanting to make Wentworth jealous because she's talking about Mr. Elliot and saying he's charming, he's funny, and he's all this stuff. What the freak are we even doing right now?
Yeah,
are we trying to make a poor guy who's already looking sad even sadder than he is? Because for me, I don't understand. I understand it in that doesn't make sense. I understand it in terms of how they have her thinking that he's going to marry someone else. So maybe a part of her, very justifiably, wants to make him jealous. But it just doesn't suit who Anne is as a character. Why would she be trying to make Wentworth jealous? Because even when she's probably hurt by the news, she still cares for this guy.
She still cares
for this man. But Elliot comes back into the coffee shop and she's flirting with him. Oh, don't call me a creature. We'll talk about it later. What are you talking about? I'm sorry. That scene, it mortified me.
This is the modernized version of the movie.
Fanfic. Dude, so much fun. 1995, right? Like I said, Anne is literally in awe when she sees Captain Wentworth. She's sitting in the tea shop with her sisters. They're waiting for the carriage. Wentworth is walking across the street. Then he happens to walk into the tea shop. She literally walks to him. First of all, that's a show of like, oh, I love that little camera angle change. Audience members can't see it, but I love it. Anyway, she literally walks up to him to like interact. She's excited to interact with him. She even looks disappointed when Mr. Elliot comes back because he offered, like in the 1995 one, he offers her umbrella to walk, whatever, and they have a little bit of an interaction. But she doesn't seem to engage Mr. Elliot beyond just acknowledging that he comes back. There's no flirting. There's no nothing. She just kind of leaves, and she's sad and disappointed that she has to cut this time off with Wentworth. 2007 is similar. They happen to – it doesn't drag on in terms of the context of why she's in the tea shop. She's in the tea shop. He comes in, and then he's like, oh, okay. But it's electric, and it – like there's also some awkwardness because it's a reunion that wasn't expected, but is so welcome and is like so like refreshing for them. They're like, oh, okay, cool. But they don't know the way forward now because now she knows he's not engaged, but he's like, well, what do I do now? I don't have anyone that I'm tied to and I love this woman. What do we do? So there's just this like energy there and they connect so well and they're laughing and then Elliot comes in and she's so annoyed and she's so disappointed. He's just like, ugh. But she just engages Wentworth in like a very minimal way and she says, Captain Wentworth, do you want to come to the concert, blah, blah, blah? And she invites him in because she loves this man. She wants to continue to interact with him. Tell me why 2022 had her flirting away. She's awkwardly eating. To be honest with you, there's something about the way they Dakota Johnson for me because I saw all the 50 Shades of Grey movies. She literally just is playing whatever character she played in 50 Shades of Grey. Like literally this awkward. Oh,
okay, because I never watched 50.
Oh my God. Like, eating and being awkward. It's just, it's Dakota Johnson as well. Like, she's playing herself, which is the most annoying thing. And there's a whole fan base that loves her. So they're all like, oh, I love this movie because I don't mind Dakota Johnson, but I don't want to see an actress. I mean, I don't want to see the actress's persona come through the role. And that's all I was getting with her by the end of this movie. So forgive me for going on and on. I know I've talked the most in this podcast, but I was really frustrated, honestly. Like, I was like, why are we even doing this? I'll let you now talk for a little bit because I need to take a break. I have one more about the concert and I think that's, the concert.
I don't think I even mentioned the concert. I think you should go because I don't, so I can bounce off your thoughts about the concert because I don't think I even mentioned the concert.
You see, it's so insignificant, right? And this is one of the most significant scenes in the 2007 and the 1995 one because they finally actually talk like properly, like, talking, right, to each other outside of like the other interactions that they've had. So for me, right, 2022, I'm not saying it's bad or anything, it's okay, but because of that engagement misdirection that's going on in the background, it's just like unnecessary for it to even happen. I think that's why it probably goes over your head, because we're sort of led to believe anything's Wentworth is, you know, already engaged, and now Wentworth comes in and Mr. Elliot is saying his own stupid stuff about the wedding and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But for me, right, even when Anne knows that Wentworth might leave her, there's no impact. Like, isn't there's no sadness or longing. Even, like I said, even though Anne might think that Wentworth is going to marry Louisa, she still loves this man. So she should still feel something, but she doesn't feel anything. So when he tells her, I'm going to go to the ship, whatever, tomorrow, just like there is some emotion on her face. And I think they allude to her crying when the opera person is singing as her maybe reacting.
Oh, yeah. There's a sliver of tears that do fall down her cheeks.
But I don't really kind of understand where, like, the connection we're supposed to make is here, because it's not there. It's forced. It's not there.
Probably. That's why I didn't mention. I didn't feel anything.
You see? Like, it's not there. And, you know, for a movie that wants their character to be obvious with what they say, it's just weird for me, like I said, to have this misdirect happen for so long that it leads to just nothing. Like, literally, I think, doesn't she say, oh no, sorry, what I was going to say was, to get rid of this misdirection, right, they could have just said something like, no, they want to be obvious, they want to be exes and friends. Let's say you walk into the room and I'm seeing you for the first time after a long while. I'll be like, oh, Tinashe, I heard you were blah, 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 you know, engaged or whatever. Why wouldn't they have a scene where that happens? That way we can get rid of this misdirection of, like, engagements that were not even engagements. Then we get back what we gained from, like, the 2007 and 1995 adaptation by having, like, literally, like I told you, I know you don't be liking Kieran or Hines like I do, but like I told you, though, but you did acknowledge that he walks in and he's smart and he's dashing or whatever.
He's got a presence. He's got a presence,
right? So he walks in and, like, Annie's so excited. Like, literally, she's so excited to see him again, once again. And the funny thing that I love about that scene is it shows the Elliots begrudgingly respecting him. It doesn't happen in 2007, I think, but they actually bow to acknowledge his presence in the room as well, which they didn't need to do because they look down on him. But then either way, his interaction and Anne's interaction, they're flirting, they're smiling at each other, they make a joke, they build on, like, the other interactions that have already been happening. He acknowledges what he's done to Louisa, or what he thought he did to Louisa, whatever. And when he comes to tell he's leaving, like, she's so sad. Like, when he comes, this is after the concert, actually, so I'm kind of, like, jumping a scene. But when they go, in the 1995 one, they go to the baths, whatever thing again, because the 1995 one has more stuff happening in the background anyway. So he then comes to tell her she's leaving. But it's a frustrating scene because Lady Russell comes to interrupt, and he's like, I need to go, I need your answer right now, whatever. And the answer is about the fact that the Crofts are leaving Kellynch Hall because she's going to get engaged. But she's frustrated. She's like, I'm not getting engaged. Who's saying that I'm getting engaged? But it shows, like, she's so frustrated because she just loves this man. She wants to tell him, but she can't because society kind of holds
her. I don't quite remember this thing. Granted, I even watched this movie.
Mind you, it's because I watched this movie so many times. So I know, like, the back of my hand. 2007, though, has a similar interaction, but it's still there, like, the fact that she sees him and she's excited and, you know, she follows him. Like, she literally runs after him again out of the concert hall when he leaves, because she's showing her willingness to follow him. And, like, the first time when she was persuaded, right? She's now finally growing into herself. She's more confident. So even when Mr. Elliot follows her to get her back into the room, she still just wants him there. And she's like, come back to me. And it leads on to the fact that I think that's when she gets the letter that Captain Wentworth might come to tell her some news or something. And there's a scene where the Musgroves come in and they knock or something, and the door gets open and she finds out it's the Musgroves, not Wentworth, because she's about to run away. Because I watched this yesterday. She's about to run away, like, upstairs or whatever, because she's trying to avoid Wentworth or whatever. But then when he comes into the room once again, she's like, oh my God. Oh my God, he's here. Oh my God, he's here. Anyway, all I'm trying to emphasize, and I know we've gone on and on forever now, is that she literally is still in love with this man throughout most of it, and it's shown. 2022, I don't even know what she's feeling. She's just aloof, and she's happy-go-lucky girl, you know, strong black woman. strong woman. Oh, no, she ain't black. No, strong woman. happens when you're on a rant. That's what happens when you're on a rant.
Strong black woman indeed.
I know. But even Wentworth, in 2007, when he comes to see her, like, and she says, oh, I'm not engaged or whatever, because that one is literal. They actually say, oh, no, I'm not engaged. He looks so hopeful. Yes, they get interrupted by later Russell, unfortunately. But he looks so hopeful that she's not engaged. He's like, you're not engaged?
Yeah.
These are people that are in love with. Like, these are people that are almost losing the love of their life. But when they have hope, they show it. They literally show that they're happy, that this thing that they thought was going to happen is not happening. Anyway, on to the letter. You can talk about the letter because, man.
Before I get into the letter, I'm about to undercut this rant about, you know, you haven't spoken about Henry Golding portraying this character. Yeah. So what I said, I think I've already said it when we're talking about Jeremy.
Maybe I did say it later because I did have a minor characters thing before we wrap
up. Yeah. As I said before, it was jarring to see Henry Golding in a role where he's not wholesome and good. But I couldn't help but enjoy his blatant flirtation with Anne when they met in Lyme, and more of it when they reunite in Bath. His version of candor, like honesty, and I think like Anne, who clearly could read his character and guess that his true nature and intentions, and never quite took him seriously. She was reluctantly intrigued by this man, and that was my view, and that's the only thing I have to say about Henry Golding's character. Do you know what? I thought, you know, would it have made a difference if Henry Golding was Wentworth? Could you have pictured him in that role? Or does he just have that face that doesn't, like Dakota Johnson, that wouldn't have not worked for him being Wentworth?
Okay, so here are my thoughts about Henry Golding. I really don't care, to be honest. I'll tell you this. I'm not a Henry Golding stan like some people. I didn't even like Crazy Rich Asians. I thought it was a pretty middling film, literally.
Excuse me,
I didn't care about it. It was an okay film. It was an okay film. This is hot potato take.
I'm not saying it's an epic romantic
all the diversity, but it just wasn't a movie. Like, actually, you know what? Without diverting too much, it's because they sold it as one thing and it didn't lean too much into it. They made, what's her name, Michelle Yeoh's character evil mother-in-law potentially. Then it just kind of did away with that very quickly for me.
I do have problems with that. But anyway.
Anyway, I'm not saying it was a bad movie. I just said it wasn't as epic as they sold it to be for me. In either way, I didn't necessarily care much to say. Yes, Henry Golding is very cute. I've only ever enjoyed him in one role, and that was in The Gentleman, and he plays this gangster character, and he gets shot by Michelle Dockery's character at some point. You need to watch The Gentleman if you haven't. But I enjoyed him because he played like this Cockney gangster character, whatever. So yes, he's very good at like doing these non-romantic lead roles. If he had been cast as Wentworth, I would have liked Wentworth better, because I feel like he does have the extra gravitas that maybe Cosmo Jarvis doesn't have. But I don't know if he would have still been a good Wentworth if he was portraying the way that, because it's not like Cosmo Jarvis is a bad actor. He was acting as he was told to act, like, right, as in the script probably said, you'd be awkward, you'd be whatever, and he was doing what he was told to do, I guess. So I don't necessarily think it's a matter of like whether I would have liked Wentworth better if Henry Golding was doing it, because I'm not a Henry Golding stan, unfortunately. So I apologize. I don't really care.
Okay.
I'm so sorry. I know. Like, I know so many people love him, but I appreciate that he's a guy that's getting cast in all these Regency movies. Just like, even, I was even thinking the other day, I was like, I'm actually getting frustrated with, what's his name? Oh, Zimbabwean, half Zimbabwean guy, the Mr. Hastings, the Reggie. Duke of Haiti. Yes, because he's just everywhere. I'm like, just stop. I think it's a thing about like when someone is overexposed, it kind of gets annoying. Like you kind of lose.
That's what happened to the actor who played Peter Kavinsky. What's his name?
Oh, yes. Noah Centineo, whatever. Yes. Yeah, just overexposure. Yes. Anyway, so, but back to the point. So I actually was frustrated with Mr. Elliot's character for a number of reasons. So this is a guy, I think this will go into my minor character thing, but he is his wiki description. Let me just go off what Wikipedia's character description for him is. He's a distant relation. and he's the heir presumptive of Sayerwater, Elliot. It is later revealed that beneath his charming veneer, Mr. Elliot is a cold, calculating opportunist. Yes, he's a cold, calculating opportunist in the 2022 film. But why do you have us, have him tell us his plan? I don't understand why we have him tell us what he wants to actually gain out of this
subverting
plot.
Subverting audience expectations it of him just, you know, coming in.
I was just like, are we getting a scene where she like wakes up and realizes this is a dream or something? And it was so weird. She's like, oh, he's telling me his intentions because he wants. And I was just like, oh my God, man, why are you doing this to me, film? The beauty about when the adaptations have leaned into his charmingness that then revealed to be the cold and calculating thing, right?
Yes,
is that
yes.
We once again get Jane Austen leaning into a Wickham trope, which I love because, you know, you've got the good guy, good looking guy, or seemingly good guy.
And I think with knowing, like, Harry Golding having played another character who was not wholesome, but for someone like me, having him not, like, not knowing his actual intentions, like, if they, as you're saying, if they'd revealed his intentions later, not that we don't know what happens in the book, but just seeing how cold and calculating he is, even though he was always charming, I think it would have lended more to the... Yeah.
Because I get that this version leans into the ridiculousness. That's how somehow he ends up marrying Mrs. Clay for some reason.
You know what? Yes, like, what? Yes. I think that's the theme. Leans into the ridiculous.
It's very, very leaning into the ridiculous. So for me, right, the purpose of him is to prevent Sir Walter marrying Mrs. Clay because it takes away his chances of being the heir presumptive directly. Because Mr. Elliot doesn't want money. He wants the title. He wants the status that comes with the Elliot name. Because when he married down, yes, he married rich, but he didn't marry into a titled family. So the Elliots looked down on him. So he's trying to get back his good graces. So he first goes for Elizabeth, but obviously he's more attracted to Anne. But in going for Anne, he's also trying to use a... that's my interpretation, but I'm guessing he's going for the path of least resistance, right? Because I believe maybe an Elizabeth might present more of a challenge, not because she would say no to him or anything, but he probably just wants someone who he probably thinks can be the good trophy wife kind of thing, you know? That's why he wants to make Mrs. Clay his mistress, as Mrs. Smith says, if we'd gone to see who Mrs. Smith is, but Anne is just made to be this person who only has Lady Russell as a friend for some reason. But anyway...
They skip completely the other friend who's in power.
I don't necessarily think we needed her, but I just think it would have allowed us to at least understand the way that Mr. Elliot is being underhanded in trying to come back into the Elliot's good graces. Because obviously the question is, why would this person suddenly show interest in coming back into a family that disowned him? Because his like potential title is going to be taken away if Mrs. Clay blah blah. So yes, Henry Golding is a very good actor, and yes, he's enjoyable to look at, but I honestly couldn't appreciate him because for the role that he was playing, it was just so ridiculous. And by the end, when he's kissing Mrs. I was just like, what is going on? Like,
what was that?
Oh my God.
That's what I was talking about.
Guys,
is this Jane Austen's writing or just the fact that men and women could touch like that in public? Or even I'm like, what is happening?
Literally, even when you remember the 1995 one, they kiss, but they kiss in an audience where there's like clowns and stuff. Like, that's just a weird parade. I think it's meant to show like the ridiculousness that they're in this ridiculous town of Bath or whatever, but it's not like anyone around them who they know is seeing them. 2007, they're on an particular, mostly empty street, I think. I don't even think anyone is around them anyway.
Yes.
And in this one, they do kiss like in an empty street-ish. I don't know, but Mrs. Clay's thing and whatever his name is, Mr. Elliot. Sorry, it's just weird. I don't understand. And then there's this whole theme about love and love who you want. I don't understand it. Anyway, it is whatever it is.
No, like.
So, Mr. Elliot, to conclude, I didn't care much for Mr. Elliot because he didn't serve the purpose he serves in other stories. Because he is actually meant to be a threat to Wentworth's prospects, right? But in this movie, they make it more like Anne actually wants to entertain Mr. Elliot and potentially marry him. Whereas in this...
I didn't get that she would want to marry him. I didn't get that. I think she was entertaining him, that she found him entertaining. Like, his ridiculousness was entertaining, but I didn't feel like... she was completely drawn into wanting to marry him.
Wrong nitpick there. I'll take it back, guys. I'll take it back, Netflix. Don't kill me now. But either way, I think for me, before, because I think the minor character stuff will make this drag on. I was just going to say the last thing was the letter, as you said before.
Yes.
It just was not delivered as well as it could have been delivered. The words, the key words, you know, that Wentworth says about, like, you know, his heart and how much he desired or longed for her or whatever. Like, there's these lines that people kept repeating on Twitter. If you're on Twitter, you probably know what the words are. But it's just a non-moment for me. Like, what I love about 1995, for example, is it's a very lived-in movie. 2007 is the same. But for me, because I've watched 1995 more, I kind of, like, remember that a little bit more. The reason why I say it's a very lived-in movie, the scene happens where Anne comes to where the Musgroves are staying, right?
Yes.
Where they're staying. They're in the room. They're interacting. Captain Harville says this thing with her by the window. Captain Wentworth is listening. He's already writing another letter. But he drops the ink bottle because he hears something that Anne says that, like, shocks him to be like, oh, my God, I need to get this woman to understand that I love her.
Yeah.
And he frantically writes his letter. And do you know the joy I feel whenever Kieran Hines' character walks out of the room with Captain Harville and Anne gets left with Mrs. Musgrove and she's like, oh, you know, where are the people? And they go to the window. Then he comes back and he slides the letter to show that I have this letter for you to read. And she goes and takes it. She's like trembling and then she reads the letter and, like, she literally can't help it. She's sitting, she's like, I have to go. I have to go. And they're all like, Anne, what's going on? What's going on? She's so physically affected, but not in a way where she's like bawling her eyes out or whatever. And then she, like, finds him and she walks and she finds him. She's like, oh, my God, there you are. You said these words to me. And they have their moment. 2007 is the same. Yes, I do think the running was a bit excessive, to be honest with you. Like, in terms of, like, her going from the Musgroves to the Crofts to Captain Harville and all this stuff. It's really weird how they do the
running. I was watching the clips just to remind myself of that scene. I think I just stopped it when she starts running and I thought she immediately gets to.
That's what I actually thought too. But she actually runs from the moment she... So Captain Wentworth comes and tells her that the Crofts are leaving. It happens very quickly. I don't know why the 2007 one didn't give itself room to breathe. Maybe because those productions were limited to like 90 minutes strictly. But he comes and he tells her the Crofts are leaving. And then she tells him, no, I'm not engaged. And then he immediately leaves because she gets interrupted by the Musgrove family as well coming. Because the first initial batch of Musgroves is Mary and her husband. And the second batch, because I'm remembering this because I watched it yesterday, guys. I'm not like a remember of this movie from long ago. But
he's a vampire.
Literally, my memory is so good. But either way, the second batch of Musgroves come, Henrietta and all that stuff. And they're excited. They're like, we're going to fit the dress, whatever. So she's interrupted in terms of intercepting him. So he's already left enough so that she doesn't meet him on time. Then she gets out and runs back. No, what happens? What happens? Sorry. She gets a letter. She gets the letter somewhere in between that time. I can't remember when though. No, I'm lying. Okay. So she runs to the Crofts house. Sorry. She does run to the Crofts house to intercept Captain Wentworth. She gets there. Captain Harville opens the door. He's like, oh, sorry, you've missed the Admiral and Captain Wentworth. They've gone to somewhere in Bath.
Yes.
And he's like, but you've saved me the time because Captain Wentworth wanted me to give you this letter. Then he gives her the letter. Then she opens it. She's like, I gotta run and find my man. She runs, she goes to the bath waters where the Crofts are. They say, sorry, Captain Wentworth has just left. She runs again and then finally meets him in the street. So there is a little bit too much running. But either way, I think the running in 2007 was leaning on the fact that this is a woman who before didn't run after the person she loved, right? She just let him go. So I guess he's trying to show her determination or something in doing that. And I can appreciate that from a creative perspective. But in 2022, similar thing happens. She runs, but it's just not significant. Like, I didn't see even the need for her to run per se. Like, because the way the scene even plays out with her just finding out that he's not, I suppose I can. I don't, anyway.
Just want to get into this letter. I can't remember the words completely, but yes, she's trying to convey that, you know, because Anne has been talking about, you know, how women love.
Yeah. No, I'm laughing. Oh, did you see something?
This letter and the way it was portrayed to us, the audience. The way I view this letter, I love how it was shared with the audience in the 1995 version and in the 2007 version, because it allows us to, it's more like of an internal reading by, as you said, diary, kind of like she's reading a diary or writing a diary. But in this, I wanted Wentworth's voice to come through the letter, because Wentworth is not there, but she has a piece of Wentworth, him trying to communicate how he's never, he's never forgotten about her or his love for her, and he's offering his heart again. And the 95 version does a thing where she reads, she's internalizing, she's reading, right, not out loud, but or fourth wall breaking,
yeah.
But and then Wentworth's voice kind of breaks through, and then she's also kind of reading and whatnot. It's weird, but I can still take it. Compared to this 2022 version, so she's crying during this moment as well as she's reading. She's laughing, she's smirking, she's looking at the audience, and it undercuts whatever emotional moment that she's having, like the joy of it and whatever she's feeling. It is undercut by the fact that there's a fourth wall, she's breaking the fourth wall. Because why did they do that? I was traumatized by them breaking the fourth wall in this movie, because I'm like, why are you taking away from the moment, the tension of what's happening in this movie? And then so she finishes reading the letter, and then she runs, like she, the 2007 version, right? And then she gets to him. I can't remember, you said they kiss, right? But whatever they do, they hug, they kiss, right? And then she breaks the fourth wall again. The relationship in this movie was and the fourth wall. That's the fanfic I'm gonna read. I'm gonna go to Archive of Our Own and read and the fourth wall. Because why did they love it so much? Like especially if they wanna, because in 1995 version they don't do that, they don't do the fourth wall thing, right? So they're taking it from the 2007 version, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, if you're going to take it from the certain version, right, and do it like this, can you just commit to making this a fanfic mm-hmm. adaptation of a Jane Austen novel, which is Persuasion, and that this is a modern girl that has fallen, like Austen Land, if you want to do literally, it, kind of like someone immersing themselves.
Or Lost in Austen, you know, when she falls into the book?
So my bad, that's even better reference. Yeah that's even better reference, because yeah, what the hell.
I know
again, my only highlight here was the music that was playing. Birdie,
yeah, that was,
I'm back into my Birdie music. Yes, and otherwise but yeah, that's the only thing I had to say
about the letter. Yeah,
I'm not as verbose as you.
Oh my god, I'm sorry. I know I'm very, very verbose, guys, and I'm so sorry.
I know, apologies needed.
Now, trust me, I know that like I wasn't articulating some of my points well, in terms of like I could have just said them in seconds, but I think it shows how much when I was watching this movie I didn't react. But when I then sat on it, because I remember I immediately wrote notes as soon as I finished the movie.
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
we said we agreed to record. This was
after the first watch.
Yeah. Then we agreed to record. I didn't necessarily watch it twice fully. I just watched scenes again.
Okay.
It wasn't like I'm sitting there going through this torture again.
Yes. Yeah.
But when I then reflected after watching, because I then said, oh, you know what? I would prefer to have watched the 2007 version at least, because I knew the 1995 one, so I didn't need too much of a reminder there. Yeah.
Yes.
But that led to me literally watching all three concurrently, because I was like, I just need to understand why this adaptation thought it could be something so unique that it diverted so much from the source material, right? So anyway, I guess to kind of wrap up, because we've talked about the letter as the final piece of the puzzle for this interaction between Mrs. Anne Elliot and Mr. Captain Wentworth, whatever. And mind you, do you remember what I said about that book? Where Jane goes back, well, goes forward in time to our time period, It's called.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Becoming
Jane. What is it called?
Jane in Love.
Jane in Love or something. Yeah, Jane something. That's a really good book for anyone that wants to.
Absolutely. Have, you know, you all need to read that. Yes.
Whatever content. But do you remember how I told you that she actually makes her love interest Wentworth? Like she makes him Mr. Wentworth. So she actually bases persuasion on her. Like as in, this author writes as if Jane Austen came forward in time, fell in love with a guy, and then she honors him by calling the love interest that is in persuasion after the guy who's Mr. Wentworth.
You know, I need to listen to it. I remember you saying that. I need to so he actually read it again. Yes.
When she leaves the time period, he then goes and finds her books and he opens Persuasion because it's recommended by one of the bookstore people.
Yeah.
And then he opens the book and then he sees the character called Mr. Wentworth. And it makes sense for me for that particular story because Wentworth is just one of those heroes, I suppose, of Jane Austen's books, where unlike a Darcy, where you very much start on that enemy's footpath, that is very much my favorite trope. But with Wentworth, it's like this long lost love, and you're longing for this person. So in this book, anyway, she's longing for the love that she could have had, but you know, he's in the future, so she never has him. But anyway, whatever. I just thought to highlight that point because that's a good book. I need to actually revisit that book at some point. Maybe it'll cleanse my palate after this Persuasion stuff. Oh, what? Anyway, so wrapping up some minor characters.
You wanted to talk about the minor characters.
Yeah, so you can add on if you have commentary on each of
them. Yeah, absolutely.
So for me, it's really just saying Louisa, for example, loved the actress, loved the way she portrayed her because she was so sweet and everything. But it's kind of weird for me because however they made her act in this, not act as in her actual acting skills, the way she was utilized wasn't actually as much as I thought she would be because she is meant to be literally like a wedge between Wentworth and Anne. As I said before, like this misdirect that happens of engagements is meant to show like...
You didn't think they used as a wedge enough
or what?
They used
it more in a telling rather than showing way, if that makes sense. So if you remember 1995 and 2007, make a point of having Louisa flirt with Captain Wentworth very blatantly, like as in she's like, oh, Captain Wentworth. It's not a bad thing. She's not like against Anne because I'm losing my point. The reason why I'm saying this is because in this one they make it as if everyone knew that Anne was in love with Wentworth, and
they do that.
You know, like, but in the original story and other adaptations, very few people even remember who he is, and also don't care who he is enough to remember that he was in love with Anne because she's meant to be someone who was overlooked, right? She's meant to be someone who's overlooked.
The second born, yes.
So, yes, the second born, unfortunately. I'm not a second born, but I feel for the second borns. But either way, do you get my point that when Louisa's thing is used, it's not as much because Louisa's meant to act innocently in terms of her flirtation with Wentworth and her love for Wentworth, because she doesn't know that Anne was previously in love with him. So when she then says, oh, I think I'm going to go for Mr. Wentworth because you're not going for him, I'm just like, wait, what?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. We're now being just so obvious about this. It's just out there. And it's just defending. Like, it was just really weird.
And the fact that there's a scene during that time when she's talking about, I know initially I was trying to set you up with Wentworth, but after talking to him, I find him
drawn to him or something.
Drawn to him. I was about to say attracted. Hey.
Yeah, I think so. She says attracted or drawn to him.
I didn't want to say that word because we were talking about Victorian English, but she's drawn to him, and then she says, I forgot what I want to say. And then she says that I think Anne says something along the lines like, you do not need to tell me this, or it doesn't matter or whatnot, or you like him that much or something like that, or why are you telling me, why do I have to know? And then she's like, it's obvious from how you did not look at him that, you know, there is something there. Something along those lines, like there is something there between you and Wentworth, like, you know, or something like that. Unless I'm misremembering. Did it happen like that?
I don't know. I think so. But either way, it was still an indication that like she was sort of saying, I know something was up with you guys, but you're not interested in him, so I'm going to go for him.
Yes, kind of. Yeah.
Which was really weird. And to touch on that just briefly, because this is the Musgroves as well, they didn't really touch on the fact that the whole Elliot Pride thing wasn't shown through because, yes, Mary makes a little quip about how she's not going to go into the hater's house because, like, Henry Hater, like, the, I don't know why they, he's called Hater, but that must be a name from back in the day. Mm. But the cousin, she's not going to go into the house because he's...
It's like Hater with H-A-Y-T-E-R, yeah, not Hater without the Y, girl.
I used to be like, Hater, Hater, what the hell? Anyway, but either way, I just find it funny that that's actually really not important, but it just is a characteristic. What do you call it? Like a thing that is used to define the fact that the Elliots are very much prideful and all about the money and the status and all that stuff. But his character is just like a throwaway line, and they go and visit it. But you know, as an audience member who's never watched this source material, it makes no sense for it to be even included if you're not even going to lean into the source material. If you get what I mean, because it is a big deal that Henrietta. I love 1995 touches on this a lot. Henry Hater comes into the ballroom initially. She sees Henrietta, who he likes, dancing with Captain Wentworth. And he's like, oh, shit, this man is coming to take my girl.
Yeah.
And then later on, they go to the Hater's house. And Henrietta is too infatuated with Captain Wentworth to care enough that she hurts Henry Hater's feelings. But it actually highlights Louisa's characteristic because she's very forceful in saying, you have to make amends for this, right? This is a guy that you like. You know, throwing away your chances or whatever. So it actually is a moment that not only shows Louisa's character, but allows for like us as the audience member to understand that, okay, Henrietta might have done something wrong, whatever. This union will inevitably happen. And then he reconciles it with like, I think Henry Hater comes back and he meets Captain Wentworth or something and says hello, whatever. I don't care. That's not really important. But all I was trying to say was it's a moment where you sort of have that distinction where Mary is coming across as like, oh, I don't like all these poor people, whatever. But also Louisa has a moment to shine as a character in terms of whatever she says about going to the... I don't think that happens in the 2022 version. It's just more so a moment they use to allow Captain Wentworth and her to talk and have a pointless conversation about Anne, which is really pointless. Anyway, it's a pointless conversation. That's all I'm going to say. But yes, I just had to talk about that because I was watching that going, I didn't get anything from this scene. Like I do in the 2007 or the, like, why are they going on a walk in the first place? We don't even get to see the house. Like, do we see the house? As in, we don't, in 1995, I know you sort of see a landscape of the house. Maybe 2007, you see the same thing, but.
I think we do see the house, like, off in a distance, don't we?
Oh, okay, cool. I'm sorry, audience members, if I'm just being nitpicky.
But it's been that, because I think I watched this when it came out, yeah. And then I watched it again this week. Not this week, the end of last week, so it's been a little while.
And then I think finally I think the only other one that I, well, actually the Crofts, I thought they didn't get featured enough for my liking. I don't know, I felt like the way they come across as being warm, amiable people to Anne kind of allows her to like kind of not come out of her shell a lot, but they have further interactions when they go to Bath, right? Like she meets them, she's excited to meet them because they're these people that aren't like pretentious like the rest of society. It happens in 1995 and 2007, I think. Anyway, whichever way, they still interact enough for me to be like, oh, yeah, these are significant people in Anne's life. But they just kind of get used in the first part as a way to link the Kellynch Hall being rented and Captain Wentworth coming back. But they don't really get featured afterwards. So they're pretty pointless characters to have anyway. But then the final, I guess, minor character that I wanted to touch on was Lady Russell, in the sense that they have her.
Lady Russell, I'm like, hey. You go, girl, you and the Euro trips.
I don't mind. But I was like, why is she already apologizing to Anne for whatever, you know, this whole thing? They're trying to make it so modern that it takes away from the fact that these people are off their time, right? Like, Lady Russellhead was justified to actually say, don't marry this man because there was a war happening. He was probably going to go off and he might have died and she would have tied herself to this man and been a widow. And he had no money much anyway.
So no, was she right though? I suppose you can see both sides of the story, but we're not examining her character
we're thinking from modern sensibilities. To be honest with you, I always say this, love is not enough in any situation. You need money, you need security. Even in today's time, that's actually a more relevant message sometimes.
True. Very true, very true. I'm just saying,
I'm just saying from Lady Russell's perspective, why didn't they have her stick to her guns more so she can be the person that Anne sort of has to appease? Because of all the characters, I feel like Lady Russell is still the person that's like driving a wedge sometimes with her and Wentworth, because even in 2007 she's not warm to him even by the end, like when he's already a captain or whatever. But they've got her now being like, oh, you know, he's now a captain or all this stuff. And she's fine. Like, it's got nothing to do with the actress. It's got nothing to do with the story per se. I just thought the funness they made her have took away from the fact that I thought Lady Russell was someone who's kind of like a bit too set in her ways to a detriment of Anne anyway. Like, and she's also holding on to Anne as if Anne is like her mother kind of thing. Is the best friend. They don't really touch on that at all. But yeah, it's fine. You know, she's
got I'm not as forgiving towards Lady Russell in the 1995 and 2007 version. Mostly because she is still kind of like, you know, I made the right decision for you. But also, but in this one, I'm like, hey, girl.
Yeah, I mean, I like that, but I just thought, oh, gosh, like, it was just too much, like, trying to change everything that I was just like, whatever. Anyway, but otherwise, the actress was fine. And then by the end, I was just like, oh, everybody loves each other. Okay, we can all just go and love who we love. I don't think so.
A question.
Jane Austen's own writing never allowed for people to just marry poor people. She knew that you had to marry rich. Anyway.
Yes. Yeah. But you couldn't consider him poor. He has some a vocation and all that. I was thinking about in Pride and Prejudice. It's Anne, right? Anne and Mr. Collins.
No, it's Charlotte. Charlotte Lucas.
Charlotte, yes. And Mr. Collins, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But
he has a vocation.
Makes a sensible choice in getting someone who's got an income and she's got security.
But in terms of hierarchy of who's got money and whatnot, he's kind of like in the law.
Yeah. But either way, she still needs to get married at that point because it all this age stuff. But either way, you know, so overall for me, to be honest, like it was a middling film, as I've already pointed out over the last.
I'm curious, how would you rate it?
Very difficult. 4 out of 10. That's being generous, because it can't be a 5, because 5 means it was average. But this, for me, story-wise, just did not enjoy it, even outside of the Persuasion lens.
Yeah, right? The standalone.
I think when I watched it, I did hardly laughed. I hardly felt much emotion, because I went in literally, honestly, like to any listener out there, I'm not just saying I went in going, oh my God, Persuasion, this, that. I only got these thoughts after the fact, after reflection. When I was actually watching it, I was very much blank-minded because I watched it with my sister and we're just watching very quiet. Right. She hardly reacted. I hardly reacted. We chuckled a couple of times when Mary said something, because obviously Mary's character is meant to be the quippy one. Yes. Hardly enjoyed any of Dakota Johnson's looks to camera. Did not enjoy the romance. So the point of Persuasion being romance wasn't there. So 4 out of 10 for me.
And the funny thing is the way you were looking forward to this, because I remember this
When it was a poster was released or some news came out. It was supposed to be 2 productions. It was supposed to be a Fox or Universal production and Netflix, but unfortunately Netflix did that theirs first. So apparently at Universal they slated theirs to not be done. Funny enough, do you ever know Succession? A show called Succession.
Yes, I do.
There's an actress in that. The main actress, actually. Her name is Sarah Snook or something. She's Australian. She was supposed to be Anne Elliot. To be honest with you, I can see her being Anne Elliot because of the way she looks. She doesn't have that, like, Dakota Johnson, I'm pretty look. She has a pretty look, but if she was to go into this world, I think she could definitely fit.
She could blend in,
And to be honest, I didn't think Dakota Johnson was so much that her look looks like that. It's the way they dressed her. They just didn't do enough. But I think also she does look just too modern, I suppose. There's some actresses that just look so modern. You know, like...
I cackled at that Twitter post. Like, she looks like she knows what a computer is.
I think if that guy, the Wentworth guy, was portrayed as the confident Wentworth that I expect... I don't think I would have minded him because he does look like a Regency man, right? Like,
yeah.
But anyway, let's wrap this up.
Like a cute puppy the whole time and apparently dirty again.
Oh, yes, my little dirty puppy. But anyway, but yeah, that's my, how would you rate it so that we can?
4.5.
Oh, girl, I thought she was going to be more generous.
4.5 to like 5, maybe. Mm. Yeah.
Mm.
5. Because, yes, as I said, I went in with, like, you know, already in mind that, you know, and I was laughing and giggling at some parts. Yeah, no, so I pop on back
Emma.
To five.
Yeah. Like, I just have this strong urge to want to watch Emma, 2020 Emma, that is. But I'm also probably going to go on this, like, binge of, like, all these period dramas from Jane Austen's era. Even Jane Eyre, I'm going to go into some what is it called, Bronte sisters thing, just because I want that reminder of like why I love period dramas, when they lean into what they're meant to lean into, the touches, the longing and the looks. And I have a Bridgerton episode or podcast. They talk about, they don't talk exclusively about Bridgerton, but they talk about Jane Austen, and then they touch on Bridgerton. You know, obviously it's popular, but I'll send you that episode. I think you'll really enjoy it. They really touch on, anyway, it's external to this particular recording, but I'll send it to you.
Okay, cool.
But otherwise, I think that's it from us. Audience members, thank you for hanging around and being with us on this journey, talking about Persuasion. We'll be back with some more on any movies or films or TV shows, or movies and films are the same thing, on any films and TV shows that come out and pique our interest outside of the Harry Potter sphere. So, that's it from us, guys. Do you have anything else to say, Tinashe?
No, thank you. Just want to thank the listeners. Yeah. That's all. Like, please share, please post, please like us.
we want to grow our audience, and we think we definitely say some very interesting stuff that borderline go on a rant, but we'll try to rein in on our rants in the future. But hey, when a movie comes out that induces rants, we have to rant, right? Like, we have to rant.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's it from us, guys. We'll see you next time.